The Big Show continues. Brought to you by The Comedy Cave, Calgary's most affordable night out. Dinner and a show, $29.95 per person. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Well, there's some good news and some bad news when it comes to this recent slump for the Calgary Flames. The bad news, well, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to be able to identify that. It's pretty obvious. Flames aren't playing very well right now. Calgary lost their third straight game last night. They fell 4-0 in Toronto. Another really lackluster effort, if you ask me. A disappointing response to what happened Saturday against the Edmonton Oilers. When you get embarrassed on home ice by the Oilers, you at the very least expect a spirited response over 60 minutes in your next game. And I don't feel the Flames came anywhere close to that in the 4-0 loss against Toronto yesterday. Goaltending hasn't been great. Johnny Gaudreau is struggling mightily. On and on and on. The Flames have lost 7 of their last 10. The bad news is very obvious right now if you're talking about the Calgary Flames. So you're saying to yourself, okay, bad news is easy to pinpoint. So, Steinberg, what in God's name is the good news? Well, the good news is, and it really has nothing to do with the Flames, but the good news is that no one's really taking advantage of Calgary's struggles right now. Sure, Nashville has been able to pass them, and Nashville's gotten on a pretty nice run right now, but LA and Winnipeg and Vancouver have all had chances over the last couple of days to make the Flames pay, and they haven't been able to do so. LA lost again last night. Winnipeg lost a close one to the Anaheim Ducks. Two nights ago, Canucks lost a heartbreaker against the Chicago Blackhawks. Now, eventually, if the Flames keep on playing piss-poor hockey like this, then somebody is going to pass them. Somebody is going to take advantage of one of the Stars or the Jets or the Kings or the Canucks is going to be able to make them pay and put them in their rearview mirror a little bit. But as it stands right now, if Calgary can snap out of this slump starting tonight, if they can get their game back on track this evening, then all of a sudden they're still in a playoff spot and protecting a playoff spot, even with a really lackluster stretch of 10 hockey games here. So I guess, Will, I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat the way the Flames have played over the last three when they've lost all three, or sugarcoat the up and down nature of their last 10 to 15 games, because it really hasn't been good. I have not been impressed really at all with the body of work for the Flames over the last number of weeks. But the good news for them is, even though they've played a lot of uninspired hockey, and even though they have gone into this 10-game slump, they still have been able to keep their playoff spot, and the teams behind them really haven't been able to take much advantage of their slump right now.
Yeah, and that, look, it's not going to stay like that forever. I think eventually somebody will break out and take advantage if Calgary continues to lose games and they continue to play the way they are. I mean, let's face it, I still think this stretch of 7 games before their 5-day CBA break in February is looking at, like, you know, kind of a sink or swim moment for the season for the Calgary Flames. You know, you take game one last night, it's a loss, so you still want to come out on top. I think they got to win 4 of their next 6 to at least have a chance at the postseason. This stretch of 7 games where 6 are on the road, I think are the most crucial of the season, and unless, you know, you stay in it, and then that last week of the season when you play all divisional games, that becomes the most crucial stretch. But, you know, to your point, you're right. Nobody's taking advantage. Last night, the Kings could have beat the Rangers and taken the playoff spot away from the Calgary Flames, but they didn't. And, you know, now the Flames still enter action tonight in a playoff spot, despite the way they've been playing, which has not been, you know, playoff caliber hockey. So they've got to turn around at some point, because at some point somebody's going to wake up and win a few games and pass them. But, you know, if you're the Flames, you're kind of looking at this and saying, okay, well, we kind of have another life, because despite the fact we're playing poorly, other teams are not taking advantage. So let's now go and start to win some games and, you know, look to stay in the same spot we are.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, look, I'm absolutely with you in that, you know, if they don't figure it out, if they don't start to play better hockey, yeah, somebody is going to behind them and take advantage of the slump. But to this point, it hasn't happened yet, which gives them a little bit of leeway, and it kind of gives them a free pass almost if they stop playing bad hockey. That's the big if. they still have to figure out their own game. They still have to play much better hockey, even though teams behind them haven't figured it out as of yet. Whoa. So they still need to take care of their own business, and over the last 10 to 15 games, they really haven't done a good job of doing that.
No, and you wonder how much of this is smoke and mirrors, Pat. I mean, they've got 50 games, the most of all, you know, all the teams that are chasing that playoff spot except for the Winnipeg Jets, and you know, it's kind of that mindset. The Flames are saying, hey, we're still in a playoff spot, so it's not the end of the world. And you kind of wonder that, hey, if one of these teams do step up, does that maybe make the Flames and, you know, kind of kick them in the rear end and say, well, maybe you should start playing better hockey? Because it's kind of one of those things where it's almost like smoke, and you're it looks better than it actually is. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I agree. And that's why if you're the Flames, you better start playing better hockey, because if it is smoke and mirrors, when that illusion disappears, then you're going to find yourself in a not-so-great spot. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Welcome to the Big Show on this Tuesday afternoon. He's Will Nault. My name is Pat Steinberg. We are underway from Shanks and Crowfoot Terrace. We are here for Flames game day, our home away from the Dome, the Calgary Flames, and the Montreal Canadiens tonight. It's a 5:30 face-off here on Sportsnet 960. The fans of the Flames get right back on the horse after what I thought was, I honestly looked at that game against Toronto yesterday as almost worse than what we saw against Edmonton on Saturday, because of the fact they didn't respond to what happened on Saturday. It was a really frustrating game yesterday, mm-hmm. and that third period was hard to watch. I know there's been talk about, you know, emotion and pushback.
Unwatchable,
in the third
Pat.
Period. I didn't see
unwatchable.
Any, yeah, absolutely. I didn't see any pushback whatsoever
Zero.
In the third period, and it was. It was hard to watch in that third period. So you sure do hope for a much better effort by the Flames this evening. Here's what we can tell you about the lineup tonight for Calgary. Chad Johnson will get the start in net, his eighth start in 10 games after Brian Elliott started yesterday in Toronto. The blue line sounds like it's going to stay the same, which means Brett Kulak will play his second game after missing, you know, all that time and not playing a NHL game since late November. Not sure about what the forwards will look like, mainly because there's some game time decisions and the coaching staff hasn't decided on that. As for the Montreal Canadiens, we know no Alex Galchenyuk. He was back for 5 games after missing more than a month with a knee injury, aggravated that knee injury on Saturday, and will not play tonight. Carey Price will get the start in net for Montreal this evening. The Flames have actually had some pretty decent success in Montreal in recent years. They are 4-1-1 in their last 6 trips to the Bell Center. 5:30 faceoff here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We're on the air at 4:30 with your Flames warm-up. I do want to pass along one note. It is, I guess you could say, you could call it breaking news. I don't know if it would be breaking
Wait.
Do you got it?
Breaking news from Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
And if you've perked up at your desk, if you've slowed down and pulled over to the side of the road, you probably did that for no reason. But there is a trade today in the NHL. It's a fairly minor one, as the San Jose Sharks have sent forward Tommy Wingles to the Ottawa Senators in exchange for 2 players and a 2017 7th-round pick. The 2 players, though, are kind of interesting, namely because one of them I didn't even know still played hockey. One of them I didn't know played hockey, and the other one I didn't know still played hockey. So the San Jose Sharks acquire Buddy Robinson from the Ottawa Senators and Zach Stortini.
Our boy Zach.
Didn't know Zach Stortini still played
in the Zach.
NHL. So Huggy Bear is back in the news. Robinson, Stortini, and a 7th-round pick to San Jose in exchange for
Tommy
Wingles.
Better, Pat. It gets better.
What's that?
The Sharks retaining 30% of Wingles' salary.
I think that, I mean, he was a healthy scratch of late.
5 goals, 8 points in 37 games.
Yeah, and they're looking to, I think, no doubt about it, Doug Wilson is looking to free up some salary cap room to maybe make a big acquisition before March 1st as that team tries to get back to the Stanley Cup final and win a couple more games than they did last year. They were 2 wins away from a Stanley Cup. So that's news from the NHL. Just wanted to pass it along. We've got a lot to talk about from a Flames perspective, Will, so let's get right to it. First of all, I got to be honest with you. Hearing from the coach yesterday, hearing from Captain Mark Giordano yesterday, I was kind of confused as to what game they were watching or what was so different
that doesn't make sense.
About what you and I were watching compared to what they were watching. Because you and I are on the same page. We thought yesterday's effort was awful. And there was a lot of, we did a lot, did some good things, and the bounces just aren't going our way, so on and so forth. And I'm not quite sure what game they were watching. I was a little surprised to hear that, because I thought that that effort yesterday in Toronto was extremely difficult to watch.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what the coach was talking about, and who knows, you know, maybe they're just trying to say that in the public public eye.
Yeah, it could very well be, you know, by design to be positive.
Maybe it was publicly a lot worse behind closed doors in the video session this morning, but yeah, if you were to read exactly, you know, I didn't listen to the coach last night, but I saw the quotes on Twitter, and I immediately texted you, and I said, well, what is the coach talking about here? I'm not exactly sure, because yeah, you maybe had some chances in the first. I didn't mind your first period, but in the final 40, it did not look like you were generating much, and certainly in the third, I don't know if you can, you know, what is there even to say about that third period? It was pretty, you know, didn't have a lot of passion, didn't seem like the players really into it. It was about as going through the motions as you can get in that third period at a 4-0 score. So, yeah, I wasn't exactly sure what the coach was talking about, and you know, hopefully it was different behind closed doors, but, you know, we talk about a false sense of hope, perhaps looking at the standings, and if that's the message to the team, then who knows what they're thinking, right?
So yeah, and I just hope that it is, you know, by design to be talking positively in public, because, yeah, I can say this much, that evaluation did not jive with the evaluation on Twitter, did not jive with the evaluation on our text line, which was as red hot as it got yesterday, and certainly did not jive with the way you and I saw it last night. I was not impressed whatsoever with virtually anything I saw from the Flames. Goaltending struggled. The blue line was pretty lackluster. There was no emotion after a first period that, you know, they were okay in. They kind of collapsed after the first goal tipped in by Mitch Marner. Didn't like much at all from that Flames effort yesterday. So, yeah, I wanted to get that out of the way. Brian Elliott did not make the most of his opportunity. You and I got into a kind of a heated conversation yesterday about, you know, what's going to happen next and what is the best way for the Flames to approach their goaltending situation right now. And the one thing you and I did agree on yesterday, though, was that, you know, this game against the Maple Leafs was a real opportunity for Brian Elliott. Chad Johnson had kind of struggled for a couple of games, and Elliott had a real opportunity. I can't sit here and tell you that he made good on that opportunity. I don't think that he took the ball and ran with it, and I thought it was pretty easy to go back to Chad Johnson tonight.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the last night's performance and you know, after a pretty decent first, when your team was still kind of in the game at 1-0, he lets in that goal from Kadri on the far boards, and that makes it 2-0. The third goal from Hyman just can't go in at that point, and the way that play, you know, kind of went about where it hits him in the logo and just sits between his legs. That was a bad goal, and that kind of took all the air out of the balloon if it wasn't already gone after that Kadri second goal. So, yeah, the way things went last night, despite the fact that, you know, if things went well, perhaps they would have let that leash run a little longer.
Right.
It didn't go well, and right now you need wins, so you got to switch it up, and as a result, they're going to Chad Johnson, and we'll see. Maybe he can backstop the team to a win tonight. And the one thing we do know, Pat, right now for this team, allowing the first goal and the first period, I guess their starts, if you want to call it that, have been the biggest concern for me. That includes the goaltending. We know about the way last two starts for Chad went against Nashville and Edmonton. This team's first period has been a real killer of late, and sometimes you need that key save when things aren't going right, and let's face it, right now they're just not getting that.
Well, and you talk about starts. 8 consecutive games the Flames have allowed the first goal in, and 9 of their last 10. And they've won some of those games, and allowing the first goal isn't necessarily a sign that you're going to lose the hockey game, but, you know, as Captain Obvious might say, you need to score more goals than the other team to win. And if you're allowing the first goal, that puts you behind the eight ball every time.
Well,
I know, cutting edge analysis from the Big Show. That's what we're here for. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly not the proper recipe for success. And to do that 8 games in a row, I don't even know if you can really put a finger on why that is, because sometimes they get off to good starts and the puck goes in on the other side. Last night, it was a decent start, and you know, you can't really fault the goaltender on the first goal. Nice tip by Mitch Marner, tough to track that puck, and it's 1-0. But what I didn't like about last night is their response to the first goal going in, because they didn't really respond in any positive manner whatsoever.
And just to echo the starts, if you will, or the lack of good starts for the Flames, our good friends at Sportsnet Stats putting this on Twitter 2 minutes ago, the Flames minus 13 goal differential in the first period this season ranks 28th in the NHL.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. They need to get off to better starts and see if tonight they can.
You're talking about chasing playoff spots and chasing the standings, Pat. It's the same for games, right?
Exactly. You don't want to chase games. It is not the situation that you want to be in. They've got the Habs tonight. Tell me if you agree or disagree with my. This is, I don't know what it is, but I looked these two games back-to-back going into them, Toronto yesterday, Montreal today. For whatever reason, Toronto scares me more than Montreal does. And I know Montreal is further ahead in the standings, has a nice cushion on top of the Atlantic Division right now. They're the number one team in their division. They've been good all year long in that regard. I don't know if it's the injuries, no Galchenyuk, no Desharnais, no Gallagher. I don't know if it's just not seeing the Habs a ton this year, but the Leafs scare me a little bit more than the Habs do, at least as it stands right now. The Leafs scared me yesterday more than Montreal does today. Are you on board with that, or am I out to lunch in that regard?
I mean, I'm kind of with you, because I'm still not convinced Montreal's an elite team. I still don't put them in a category with a Washington or Pittsburgh in the Eastern Conference, and you know, despite the fact they've led in that division wire to wire so far this year, I don't look at them as an elite team. I think they have some elite pieces. I think their goalie is one of, if not the best in the world right now. And I know that he's struggling, and that's kind of been why that gap has kind of shrunk a little bit when it comes to their division lead. And certainly Carey Price, I think at some point is going to turn things around. You're right, they're beat up, and that's maybe why you've seen a little bit of a lack of offense right now from the Habs. But, yeah, I don't know, Pat. I just don't really see them as an elite team in the Eastern Conference, and I think that you would probably echo that, right?
I'm not quite on board with them being a Stanley Cup contender, and I take a look at some of the teams in the Metropolitan Division, and I think there's a pretty good chance Montreal's the best team in the Atlantic Division, although I'd be really interested to see a playoff series between Montreal and Toronto. Yep. I think that would be extremely entertaining.
And look, when he figures out his game, their goalie can carry them to a Stanley Cup.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Or at the very least can carry them out of the Atlantic Division playoffs. You know, I think Montreal loses to Pittsburgh. I think Montreal loses to Washington.
Right, but he also gives them a chance, right?
He does. I mean, when he's on his game, he's the best goaltender in the world and hasn't been over the last
right now,
three
apparently
weeks
Washington
or so.
Doesn't score less than six, so it doesn't really
14.
Matter.
Games in a row with a point for Washington, just 12-0-2, just a 10-game point streak.
Yeah,
for Nick
another
Backstrom.
Six spot last night.
Yep, six unanswered goals after falling
no
down
big deal.
1-0.
Just, plus 54 goal differential.
They're all right, and now they're on top of the NHL once again. Flames, Habs, 5:30 tonight, 4:30 warm-up here on Sportsnet 960.
Hey, you got to watch your boy Paul Byron tonight, Patty.
Still wish he was a member of the Flames. Really do. I lamented it. I objected it when it happened. I was a big booster of what Byron was when he was here. He was always an effective player. People, he couldn't score on breakaways. Yeah, you know what? He did a lot of really good things. And now, you know, you're like, geez, that could have been a really nice piece to have on the Flames. I still don't really see the reason why they put him on waivers. Anywho, that happened like 2 years ago. So here we are now. And
hey, I just wanted to tell you, you're going to watch him play. I was trying to cheer you up, Pat. Okay?
I'm happy for him, though.
There you go.
Good for him. Quickly before we wrap the segment, a couple CFL notes need to get to. First off, talked about it yesterday. We knew this was coming, but it is official. Congratulations to Henry Burris, who officially retired today after 17 seasons in the Canadian Football League. Here's Hank at his news conference this morning.
I told my wife throughout the course of last year, when I took several hits in certain games, I was like, man, these hits are feeling a lot harder. These guys are getting younger, younger, stronger, stronger, faster and faster. And throughout the course of the season, in my mind, I knew it was my final year. It's in Saskatchewan where people booed me, but off the field, they offered me a Pilsner. Even in Hamilton, all the great relationships that I have there, you know, for me, let the party begin.
Hey, congratulations to Henry Burris, who is able to retire on top. He goes out on top as a champion. His crowning achievement was that Grey Cup win over Calgary. He saved the best for last, and Will, he deserves every accolade he's getting today.
Absolutely, he does, and we said it yesterday, not very often where a guy gets to say that his final game of his career might be one of his best, and certainly think that that's the case for Henry Burris and the performance he put on the field in Toronto, the 2016 Grey Cup, and to be able to lead that underdog Ottawa franchise to their first Grey Cup ring, and to dethrone his old team, the Calgary Stampeders, after the dominant season they had. He really is going out on top, and the numbers speak for themselves. Certainly the Hall of Fame is waiting for Henry Burris, but very, very happy that he's going to go out the way he is. And I'm kind of glad that we're not going to see him next year, Pat, because who knows if he's able to repeat what he did in 2016. I don't think that taints the image or the legend of Henry Burris, but certainly very, very happy that he gets to go out the way he is right now.
And finally, the Argos fired Jim Barker today.
On January 24th.
Strange. I mean, the season.
Good job,
has been
Toronto.
Over the, I mean, hey, it's their own. I don't necessarily. They can do whatever they want.
I mean, it's a long evaluation, though.
It is a long evaluation. And hey,
be like firing Tree Living in September 6th.
More like August 5th. We still got a little bit of time before training camp gets going in the CFL. I mean, I'm not as incredulous on it as other people are. I love Jim. I think he's a great man. But, I certainly haven't loved a lot of what the Argos have done over the last couple of years. The Drew Willey trade has blown up in their face. They trade for Drew Willey, who does not look like a starting quarterback in this league, or at least not a good one. We don't know what the heck's going to happen with Ricky Ray. They trade for Drew Willey, give up a first-round pick, and that first-round pick just happens to now be the number one overall pick in May's draft, or April's draft, May's draft. And now the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have got that number one overall pick. The Argos had a horrible season, a horrible second half. I don't necessarily disagree vehemently with the decision, but you're right. The timing is odd for it to take as long as it did. And for them to, make this in late January when the season for them ended in November. It is a little strange that it took this long.
Yeah, I just don't understand what the evaluation process was and how long it took. And look, let's be honest. I mean, I thought Arash Pandani made a great point today, and he was talking about how they make this move now, and if a new GM comes in, he wants his new coaching staff. He can't really do it immediately because all the coaches have now signed for their spots for next season. So it puts the new GM a little bit behind the eight ball. The timing is certainly odd, but as for the move itself, I can't really disagree.
So there you go. A couple of CFL notes as well from around the league today. He's Will. I'm Pat. Big show's underway. Beer Fest is coming back to Calgary. And now it's a little ways away. May 5th and May 6th at the BMO Centre at Stampede Park. Calgary International Beer Fest, Western Canada's largest beer festival. But we've got an opportunity now for you to win a VIP prize pack. Enter the promo code SPORTS25 at albertabeerfestivals.com/buy tickets to receive 25% off your tickets. And fan club members, enter now for the chance to win a VIP pack for Beardfest at sportsnet.ca/960. So again, the promo code is SPORTS25. That'll get you 25% off tickets if you go to the website and go to sportsnet.ca/960 as a fan club member, and you could enter for the chance to win a VIP pack as well. He's Will. I'm Pat. An early look at the Super Bowls up next with Jason Lack and Fora, including why one team was finally able to get over the hump. That's as we continue on today's Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show continues. Brought to you by The Comedy Cave, Calgary's most affordable night out. Dinner and a show, $29.95 per person. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet 960's NFL insider Jason Lacanfora, brought to you by Shank Sports Grill. Watch as the Atlanta Falcons take on the New England Patriots Sunday, February 5th at 4 at Shank's North and Shank's South, your headquarters for Super Bowl 51.
Welcome back to Shanks and Crowfoot Terrace. Pat Steinberg along with you on this Tuesday afternoon. It's a Flames game day. That's what we're doing here. Flames in Montreal at 5:30. But now we welcome in our NFL insider, Jason Lacanfora from CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. Mr. Lacanfora, how are you today?
I'm okay. Everything good there?
Everything's very good here. And we got lots. I know the Super Bowl is still 12 days away, But we've got lots to talk about before then, and got some interesting questions, at least interesting to me, on the actual matchup itself. But before we do that, let's start with the teams that were eliminated on Sunday, on Championship Sunday, and we'll start with the Pittsburgh Steelers, because all of a sudden some buzz surrounding Ben Roethlisberger and his future. Went on a Pittsburgh radio station today, would not commit to coming back and playing in 2017, talked about his health, talked about needing to reevaluate. What did you make of what Ben Roethlisberger had to say today?
I wouldn't lose any sleep over it. I wouldn't sweat it. I wouldn't. I wouldn't have any concern over it. It's the end of the year. Guys are going to rant. You know, they're going to kind of let off some steam. He just signed a long-term deal. He's in pretty good health. He's not going anywhere. Ben likes drama. Ben likes to stir this stuff up. It's part of his mystique. Trust me. Nobody's sitting there right now in Pittsburgh saying, oh, my God, we better do more work on the quarterbacks in this draft. Like, oh, boy, what are we going to do? How are we going to replace Ben? It's Ben being Ben.
I think that's a pretty definitive answer. So don't worry would be the message from Jason Lacanfora on the Ben Roethlisberger news or comments today. Okay, so with that being said, Ben Roethlisberger comes back next year. This team gets to the AFC title game. Once they get healthy, they look like a real powerhouse. Once they had Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell and Roethlisberger all healthy at the same time, they were a handful. How bright does this future look looking ahead to next season for Pittsburgh?
I mean, I think pretty bright. They were one of the hottest teams in the league in the second half. They got the defense fixed. That didn't look that way, obviously, against Brady. But, I mean, that's at Foxborough against Brady in a championship game on a day when their star running back never even really gets on the field. So, you wouldn't get too, you know, caught up in that. I think the biggest gains they made were on defense. Shazier, you know, really came into his own. Bud Dupree was a legitimate pass rusher in the second half of the season. And there's some, you know, they haven't had an edge guy, a young edge guy like him with some speed in quite some time. Harrison says he wants to play another year. Artie Burns, some of their young corners, the corner slash safety, Davis, played very well. And they, you know, traditionally draft well, and I think they'll continue to plug some of those holes. On offense, it's a juggernaut. I mean, the offensive line, most of those guys are signed for the long term. They're going to have to work out a deal with Le'Veon Bell, and they're going to have to figure something out with Antonio Brown in terms of extensions, but they'll get that done. If they have to franchise Bell, that'd probably be their worst-case scenario, but he's not going anywhere. So, yeah, I think they've got a nice window there. Remember, they had no Martavis Bryant all year and no Marcus Wheaton. They're getting back
right.
Two of their top four receivers. So, and you look at, you know, what they did sort of along the way this year. And Ladarius Green didn't really play for them this year that much. You know, he missed the first half of the year on the PUP list. He came back. Once he got into that offense, he was a real threat, and then he had the concussion that kept him out of the final few games. And he does have a concussion history, so, you know, there's a caveat there. You know, I don't know if you could pencil him in for 16 games next year. But, yeah, I like Pittsburgh a lot. Baltimore is still down. Cincinnati's still down. I don't think either one of those teams is going to be a juggernaut next year, and Cleveland's the worst team in the league. Pittsburgh will be hosting a playoff game next year.
Then there's Green Bay, who really could not get out of their own way throughout most of the first half of the season, then go on that incredible run in the second half. They win a couple playoff games and then end up losing in the NFC title game in Atlanta. So what are these Packers? I mean, are they closer to the juggernaut they looked like down the stretch, or is there still a little bit of that first half Packers in them?
I mean, I think they righted some things. They figured some things out offensively. They got back in a rhythm between, you know, Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. Remember, there was drama at the beginning of the year about who would be calling plays, and it was, you know, Tom Clements for a while. You know, is McCarthy going to stay with it? I think they sorted that out. They got Jordy Nelson healthy. They've got to get better on defense, though. It's the personnel is just not there on that side of the ball. And that's why I think early in the year, even in my predictions, I'm like, look, this is not the roster it used to be. If this team reaches the heights that some think it can, it means that Aaron Rodgers has had another out-of-this-world season. That means that Aaron Rodgers must have been the best player in football. And the final 8 weeks of the regular season and the first two rounds of the playoffs, he absolutely positively was. And that lifted them from 4-6 to ultimately, you know, at one point, I guess they were, you know, what, 12-6 before they went into the championship game. So, you know, he's the best player in football, and that's going to give them a chance. And again, that division isn't great. So I think they're, you know, they'll be in okay shape, but I think their defense needs a lot of work. They need, you know, they need to find their Bud Dupree. They need to find their Ryan Shazier. I mean, Matthews is getting long in the tooth. Peppers is a situational guy at best now. The D tackles is not what it used to be when they had, you know, B.J. Raji in his prime, and you know, they had Cullen Jenkins and some guys like that. They've decayed on that side of the ball. At a lot of positions, there's just no two ways about it. They signed some corners to big contracts that haven't exactly panned out. So I think Ted Thompson's got his work cut out for him on that side of the ball. I think they were 31st in the league in yards this year. I mean, that's you know, not a whole lot going on that side of the ball. So I think, you know, they'll probably be a similar team next year, and that Aaron Rodgers will have to continue to carry them as they try to retool on defense, and we'll find out in January how far he can carry them.
He's our NFL insider, Jason Lacanfora, who joins us every Tuesday and Friday here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960. The Fan, looking ahead to Super Bowl 51. You know, here we are 12 days away from kickoff. But everyone seems to be predicting right now, as soon as the NFC and the AFC title games were done, everyone was predicting a high-scoring game. Is that kind of the same wavelength that you're on 12 days out?
I think so. I mean, I don't remember what the – I know that the first game, the NFC Championship game, went over, even though that number was historically high, right? That game, I think the over-under was around 60. And that went over. I wasn't sure what the number was on Pittsburgh and New England. I thought it would be high scoring. Obviously, most of the scoring was done by New England. But I think that went over as well. These teams are going to score points. You know, I that's just that's the reality. You've got two quarterbacks who are in peak form. Who spread the ball around, who each week another guy could be a hero. You know, that's a real similarity there. You know, in Atlanta, it might be Taylor Gabriel one week. It might be one of the two running backs the next. I mean, yeah, they've got Julio, you know, but Mohamed Sanu was kind of carrying the load for a while at times. Remember when they had the toe injury down the stretch with Jones and they were nursing him. And in Oakland, I don't know where that came from. In New England, last week it was Hogan, right? And some weeks it's Edelman. And, you know, before he got banged up, it was Amendola. And you even saw Floyd make some plays. And, you know, Martellus Bennett. I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm losing my mind. Martellus Bennett has been the hero some weeks. They spread it around. Some weeks LeGarrette Blount carries 30 times. Some weeks he carries two. You know what I mean? It was Deion Lewis this week. I think that it's hard to keep all that down. You know what I mean? It's hard to suppress all that on the other side of the ball defensively when you're facing offenses like this. You've got two of the master schemers in the NFL, Josh McDaniels pulling the strings of New England's offense from a coordinator standpoint, and Kyle Shanahan doing it for Atlanta, likely for the last time, as you know, he's set to become the head coach in San Francisco. So, you know, yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of points scored. I think Atlanta may have, in some regards, the better defense because I think they have a few guys who can get after the passer a little more naturally. And often in these games, that is the difference, especially when you're talking about quarterbacks who play at this high of a level.
When we talk about this game, there's always, like, you see different at this time of year when you're getting set for a game that's 2 weeks out, all kinds of things are written. But I found it really interesting today seeing on I think three different network websites kind of the same story written about how this is New England's opportunity to stick it to Roger Goodell, the commissioner, after what happened at Deflategate. How much of that actually plays into what's going on in New England's head right now?
Well, look, when you win as much as they do, when you've been, historically speaking, certainly the most prolific franchise of the salary cap free agency era in the NFL, and you could argue they are the greatest dynasty in league history, then you have to sort of come up with motivations, right? You have to continually – when you literally play in the AFC Championship game pretty much every year, you've got to find ways to keep a chip on your shoulder and find ways to, you know, reach that extreme levels of motivation that it takes to win in a game that's this competitive. So Yeah, any slight or perceived slight against them, they are very adept and acute at latching on to and ratcheting it up a few notches internally for motivation. Tom Brady still gets off on the fact that how many teams passed on him, how many different times, and how many guys were picked ahead of him, and just how many quarterbacks were picked ahead of him. And, you know, Belichick, I think when he's feeling too good about himself, he goes and reads the clips when they ran him out of Cleveland, you know, and people, you know, couldn't wait to get him out of there. So if you have a year in which you don't think you really did anything wrong, and you certainly don't think the league proved you did anything wrong, and they made an example out of you, and they took away your draft picks, and they told arguably the greatest player in the history of the NFL, stay home for 4 weeks because we think it's more probable than not, right? Ted Wells in his big report, it's more probable than not that you may have known something that was maybe happening with these footballs that may or may not have had any influence on the game whatsoever. And he sits for a quarter of the season, and he comes back and he plays like a stallion again. For them to have this season end, you know, 4 quarters away from having Goodell have to look them in the eye and hand them that trophy, you don't think that when before they're falling asleep, as much as they've won, guys like Belichick and Brady aren't still thinking about that with a bleep-eating grin on their face? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. And it's going to be awkward up there on that podium if they do manage to beat the Atlanta Falcons in 2 weeks.
Which will not be an easy task. Here's a Falcons team that has one of the most explosive offenses in the NFL, showed it on Sunday in the NFC title game. But, Jason, for the longest time, the Atlanta Falcons have been an outstanding regular season team. They're a perennial playoff team. You know, the kind of the core group with specifically Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, but a couple of other guys are in that group as well. This team has had a lot of trouble getting over that hump and winning the big game. Well, this year they've won not one but two big games
right
in the postseason. What's changed? What has allowed Atlanta to get over the hump and be representing the NFC in the Super Bowl?
Well, they've not that they've had a fortress at home before, but they've been able to play at home. They're a dome team. They're built for that dome. It's one of the faster surfaces in the league if you talk to guys. And they're a speed team, built for speed, and not built to be playing in the snow and the rain and the sleet and the mud. So that's part of it. They've got the coordinator there, Kyle Shanahan, is at the top of his game. As we said, he's about to become a head coach. And after butting heads with Matt Ryan last year, those two are on a wavelength that very few others can match. Unfortunately for them, McDaniels and Brady can. You've amassed a lot of weapons there. And the defense, I mean, look, for years, they haven't had a pass rusher there since John Abraham was in his prime. Well, Vic Beasley led the NFL in sacks. So, yeah, it's a bend-don't-break defense because, you know, they'll let you get yards between the 20s, but he kills a lot of drives with third-down sacks. And specifically sacks, you know, around the 20 that might drive you out of field goal range and that certainly prevent you from getting seven. They can get pressure from a couple of different guys there now. And they've upgraded the defensive backs as well. And in the 2 years in Dan Quinn's scheme, and that's a very complicated, different sort of a defense to take hold. And they struggled in the second half of last year with it. And things have clicked. So this is certainly the best team they've had there, you know, in quite some time. They've had some decent offenses. Obviously, they had years with Michael Turner where they ran the heck out of the football, and yeah, they've been on the cusp of this in some years in the past. But they've got the best roster there that they've had in quite some time. A lot of those teams that made the playoffs, you know, when my buddy Tony Gonzalez was there, they really knew they couldn't play any defense worth a damn. They knew they weren't tough. They weren't physically built from the inside out. And they weren't as tough in the trenches as they are now. And they have changed the complexion of that team over the last 2-3 off seasons.
And now here they are representing the NFC in the Super Bowl, and Atlanta and New England kick off in 12 days. We'll have it for you here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We got a number of visits with you until that point, Jason, so appreciate this, my friend. We got lots to talk about when we meet up again on Friday. Thank you as always.
Always my pleasure. Thank you.
He's Jason Lacanfora. He's our NFL insider from CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He's brought to you by Shanks. Shanks is your home for the Super Bowl in Calgary. And quite honestly, unless you're going to be in Houston for the game, I can't think of a better place to watch than here at Shanks and Crowfoot Terrace, where we are right now, or Shanks on McLeod Trail South, Calgary's largest event screens. Even if you are here a little bit later and can't get yourself in front of one of those event screens, they've got big screens everywhere, drink specials, food specials, and Calgary's best football watching atmosphere. Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, is a week from Sunday. The Flames take on the New York Rangers that afternoon, so come on down early, watch the Flames take on the Rangers. Stick around for the Patriots and the Falcons. All day it at Shanks, Shanks North and Shanks South, your home for the NHL and the NFL in Calgary. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Audio on demand, podcast, streaming live. Calgary's only 24/7 all sports radio. Sportsnet.ca/960. The questions you're asking, the answers you're craving. It's three burning questions on The Big Show, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
My name is Pat Steinberg. His name is Will Nault, and Will has got our three burning questions this afternoon. William?
My first question is, did you have fun in overtime last night?
No, I did not. Actually, it was fun. Good heated edition of the program. Look, some really good calls, some good, honest conversation. It was a bad loss last night, and you know, there was, I think that with the way things have gone here of late, with seeing this team get swept by the Edmonton Oilers for the first time in ages, to see them get swept in the fashion they did on Saturday night, you know, that was hard enough. But to then see them respond the way they did, I mean, again, when you and I talked in the first segment about, you know, it was a little strange hearing some of the players and coaches talk about playing a good game and had their opportunities and, you know, things just didn't go their way. The reason why it was so strange to me is that it wasn't just that I looked at last night as a really poor effort. It was that every single one of the callers that came on the show was on that same wavelength. There was not, I can't think of a happy Flames fan with what they saw last night. So to hear the coaching staff and the players and the captains and that type of stuff talk about the game as if it was, you know, right there for the taking and they just got a little unlucky, I think that was a little frustrating. So that certainly came out on overtime last night.
All right, now to the three burning questions. And the first one I have for you is all this talk about teams that are chasing the Calgary Flames in the Western Conference. I think that the team, now I could be wrong, but I think if I was looking at this right now and if I was in Pat Steinberg's head, his thought would be the LA Kings scare you the most in terms of a team that could track down the Calgary Flames. And Pat, my question for you is, with the lack of goal scoring, and I know that they have some cap issues in LA, but if you're Dean Lombardi, you going out to get a goal scorer right now?
Jeez. I mean, you're right in that if I were to pinpoint one of the teams, it would probably be LA, but not really convicted on that, mainly because I keep waiting for them to play better, and I keep thinking that they are capable of playing better, but they're not doing it. And, you know, they outshot the Rangers big time last night. They end up losing that game 3-2. I mean, Budaj's been okay, but has certainly not been outstanding. The goal scoring isn't there, and yeah, they're making some key mistakes at some key times, and it's costing them hockey games. Do I think Dean Lombardi goes out and gets a goal score? I wonder, because I think if you're Lombardi and the Kings, you kind of understand that your window might be closing here. You know, they went out and made a huge acquisition in Milan Lucic before last season. It worked for them in the regular season, but they went out in the first round. I think that this is probably the last year that Lombardi would look at something like doing that. And because of that, because this team still does routinely outshoot opponents, this team does play still a very, very structured brand of hockey. Knowing they have cap issues, they'd have to figure some stuff out, but I could absolutely, I think there's a pretty good chance that Lombardi tries to make an addition this before the trade deadline.
The Colorado Avalanche having a historically bad season. In fact, their points percentage is the lowest for any team in the NHL since the 2000-2001 edition of the Atlanta Thrashers. So it's not a good year. Like, they could lose 50 games this year, Pat, could the Avalanche. I know that we talk about adjustments made in the summer, but now, you know, you look at the standings in the East, we talked about a bit yesterday, 5 points from dead last to a playoff spot in terms of the separation. In the West, a little more distance is, you know, look at Dallas, they're still in the race at 4 points back, but then a huge drop-off to Arizona and then another big drop-off to Colorado. And the question I have for you is, if they do sell at some point this season, the rumor that's picking up noise, it was out there last year And, you know, certainly when you look at the history of Ontario, the Leafs are the team there. But for some of the younger kids, Ottawa was maybe one of the teams they jumped onto. And the question I have for you is, could you see a Matt Duchene to the Ottawa Senators trade? Would that make sense for both sides? And if you're Ottawa, are you giving up? What are you giving up? Is it a Cody Ceci? Is it a Thomas Chabot? Is it draft picks? First of all, what are your thoughts overall on this potential rumor?
Well, I've heard the rumor, and I think I don't think if you're making a trade like that, if you're Ottawa, I don't think you're giving up, or you're trying anyway to not give anybody up on your active roster.
Right.
So that would mean Cody Ceci isn't part of it.
Right.
Thomas Chabot's a guy that I think would be interesting. Obviously, a prospect not at the NHL level yet. I think there's a chance that he might be involved. Obviously, numerous draft picks are probably going to be involved. I would think that a guy like Chabot might be in the conversation, though. He's got a nice little cachet after what he did at the World Juniors. The Avalanche are not very deep in that position. They need help both at the NHL level and the prospect level on the blue line. So, yeah, I could see him being a big part of a trade that would send Duchene the other way.
It's interesting. And you know, certainly with the news of that we got last week where the Sens said they will not have Clark MacArthur from now into the end of the season, they were expecting him back, so they look at that as a potential hole in their lineup, and you just wonder if they go and make a big splash like that, if it is a guy like Matt Duchene. Question number three, and it's certainly a name that's out there. Now, for the first time, you know, those games played, a little bit catching up, and for the first time in a while, you know, we talk about the smoke and mirrors with the Flames in their playoff spot. Well, that was very much the case in Boston. And, Pat, you know, they're in the race, so I don't know if it's going to happen, but there seems to be a lot of fire where this is, and you wonder. I mean, does Claude Julien last the season in Boston?
I think he lasts the season. If they miss the playoffs, I think he's done. Or if they go out early in the playoffs, I think he's done. The only way it doesn't happen, in season, is if they fall out of it. If the Maple Leafs use their games in hand, now they've got five games in hand and are a point up on the Bruins. If they use those games in hand and put the Bruins way in their rearview mirror, if Boston ends up being 5 and 6 points out of this thing as they go into the stretch drive and after the trade deadline, I could see them making a move in that respect. But if Boston stays in the mix and if the Bruins remain in the playoff hunt, I don't think they do anything until after the offseason. But I'm kind of going on the assumption this is the last season that Claude Julien coaches as a member of the Boston Bruins.
And the one thing we can agree on is when that separation or that divorce does happen, Julien will be much like Boudreau in terms of out of work for about 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, if he wants to work again, if he wants to be back with an NHL team, he'll find work, no doubt about it.
There are your three burning questions.
Good stuff, buddy. We'll do it again tomorrow here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Okay, the Big Show is brought to you by the Comedy Cave, and Rob and I have been telling you for weeks, months now, that the Comedy Cave is your best night out value in the city. Well, there's a new reason to believe that, and there is a new reason that they're going to put a new way that they're going to prove it to you, because right now, it's Calgary's most affordable night out. You're going to a dinner and a show for less than $30 a person. $29.95 per person gets you the show, and it gets you the full dinner. It's got salad and your choice of five entrees. You can choose from one of ribs, chicken, salmon. There's the caveman burger or vegetarian pasta. So you've got dinner and a show for less than $30 a person. You're not getting that value anywhere in the city. Tuesday through Sunday at the Comedy Cave. Reserve now at comedycave.com. Always happy to have them on board with us on the Big Show. A busy and condensed program today. Another early start for the Flames on the eastern part of the country. They're in Montreal for a 5:30 faceoff. A rough response last night. Any reason for optimism at all after that game against Toronto? And Henry Burris calls it a career today. Some reflections on that too, as Robbie and I have got lots to kick around with a very short period of time to kick it around in, as the Big Show continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Back-to-back road games against the Original Six. Next stop, Montreal. Tonight from the Bell Center, Steinberg hosts our pregame show, The Flames Warm Up Live, from Shank's Sports Grill. We start at 4:30 this afternoon. At 5:30 is puck drop from Montreal. Flames and Canadiens. Derek and Peter with the call from Montreal. After the game, it's back to Shank's to break down the game. The overtime call-in show finishes off the night when the listeners take over with their takes on the phone, on text, and on Twitter. The Flames play here. Rogers Calgary Flames Hockey is only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Calgary Flames Hockey is brought to you in part by South Point Toyota.